Okay. Welcome everyone to another edition of Buffalo Bills Maybe Next Year, the only podcast that completely eviscerates one of our fellow podcasters 3 days before they check themselves into rehab. My name is Scott.
I'm Paul.
All right, I was going to do that. I'm Frank.
Man,
Paul.
yeah, I'm sorry. I'm going to rehab with Marcel. It's
Okay.
gonna be fun
Yeah,
times.
you're the one we were talking shit about, and
Yeah.
then later
Yeah.
decided you needed actually real help and decided to check you in.
Yeah.
So we will get to the big, obviously, stories. We last obviously left you on Wednesday, and little did we know that the week would just get more interesting, and it wouldn't even be the football game. But we will start with the football game nonetheless. The Bills beat the Giants in a mostly meaningless 21-0 rout at the first of the new era Fields era.
Yeah.
Very nice day from Tyrod. Good game from Cardale and EJ, for that matter. I guess Cardale did throw that interception late, but for the most part, the defense absolutely destroyed the Giants, who looked like a terrible team. But nonetheless, no major injuries that I'm aware of coming out of the game, unless someone updates me on anything.
No, not that we know of, anyway.
I know that one of the Williams, the running back, he went into the protocol, right?
Oh,
He
Gillislee did.
Gillislee, right.
Yeah, so that's conveniently enough, after we cut running back, another one goes into the concussion protocol. But Paul,
Spoiler alert.
why don't you go ahead and give us your thoughts on what you saw out of the Bills yesterday?
Right, now here's the thing we always say, there's not a lot of you said mostly meaningless. It really is entirely meaningless, this game, but I'm going to ascribe meaning to it only because it was a happy game. It was one that we enjoyed seeing because a lot of our concerns this year have been, boy, this defense could really struggle. And wow, what a great defensive performance yesterday. Of course, by the time I was watching on and off, and I was thinking, boy, they can do no wrong. And then I immediately saw a Giant player, rip off about a 65-yard run. Which then they missed a field goal at the end of that drive, so it didn't matter anyway. So, positive signs on the defense. The Giants are not known as an offensive juggernaut again. They were certainly not at full strength with whom they were presenting on the offensive side of the ball in the preseason. But a plus, it gives the young players, some okay. This is what we did right. This is what worked. So that can guide you a bit going into the season. Offensively, again, similar to last week, I found like some highlights. Obviously, the one with Clay on Taylor's beautiful scramble. That was a good highlight. You had LeSean doing well in the receiving game. That was a highlight. They put up some points. EJ had a good performance. Powell, of course, again, I thought did very well, even though he had the non-touchdown rule. Yeah, we'll get into that. It's not another podcast of what's a catch. We'll find out next year. All in all, I was happy with the game. I think the team did very well. Obviously, as the final score indicates. And again, mostly meaningless, but the positives we'll take out of it is really good to see defense may not be as terrible as we were concerned with, and the offense clearly has some good players. And it was the last point I wanted to make on the game yesterday. I can't even remember. Oh, LeSean, running game didn't do much. That could be concerning. We'll see.
All right, Frank, do you have any thoughts on the meaning or lack thereof? I will not, and I'll just briefly say, the result is meaningless. What happens on the field has meaning for the people involved.
Yes,
That's
it's
my.
sort of it's a great metaphor for life, isn't it? Ultimately, we leave no dents, but it is important to us.
Yes.
The grander universe doesn't really much care. Maybe next philosophy. The game was nice. I mean, it's one of those things where, like you say, it doesn't mean anything long term, but I think everybody feels better if it goes well. And it certainly went well. I watched the Tyrod Taylor break away from the sack, throw deep to Charles Clay 3 times because for some reason it aired the first time, then somebody at Scott's house where I was. Accidentally restarted the DVR, and so I watched it again. And then I went home and watched my own version. And it was really cool all 3 times I watched it. It was a really good play. It wasn't just a lucky play. He smartly moved away and connected. And it was a great comparison to EJ Manuel, who in his first or so pass, had a pretty wide open wide receiver and managed to hit the DB in the hands who dropped it. So it sort of was encouraging on the whole to really see Taylor play well. I think you know, that's a really good thing. I don't know how much to read into how well the defense played, because it's hard to say. That said, I've slowly been moving away from my original position on this podcast that, you know, good defense in a running game with a mediocre quarterback will get you far. And I think that defense is less and less important in this game. I think really it is, if your quarterback can keep you in the game, you can do a lot more. And that a baseline, while a great player on defense can do great things and help you, it's really those few and far between plays where that shows up. And a basic defense or a less powerful defense is still going to get the job done, you know, 70-80% of the time. So for the bulk of the game, yeah, I think that maybe we don't need to worry about this, not so much because, you know, we have excellent players filling in, but by the nature of defense, you're having people swarm to one position as opposed to one person trying to get away from everybody else. I was also impressed with Greg Little, who actually caught the touchdown pass this time. I don't know why. He just sort of stood out to me. I don't think he did very much else other than that, but he certainly played better than the week before. And, you know, the running game looked good. It made me feel a little bit better about the cutting of Carlos Williams, which we'll get to, because it was nice to see to remind myself how good LeSean McCoy could be, because he certainly moved nicely in space. So on the whole, I was impressed, obviously, all the way around, as much as one can be in the preseason.
Yeah, I mean, I think, obviously you guys touched on a lot of the points. I mean, I think the offensive line I'm still a little concerned about. I think the lack of production in the running game specifically was concerning. I think we ended up with 70 yards on 37 carries, which is, boy, that's not great.
How many of those were in the second half behind not the offensive line, though?
I mean, yeah, but there were enough in the first half.
They didn't do anything in the first half either. Like, yeah. McCoy had five carries for zero yards. Yeah. That's not productive. And yeah, exactly. He had one of the poorer averages on the team. You know, James Wilder had the best average and the most carries. So
Wilder Jr.
Excuse me.
Right. Yeah. About as much as Wilder Sr. could probably have.
Yeah. And so the offensive line, I mean, I think that's something that we'll have to watch as the season goes on, because I think it occurs to me that the offensive line will always look a little bit better pass protecting than running, I think, because pass protecting, you have all of the defenders are going to be thinking, can't let Tyrod escape. So that, again, makes them run those disciplined rush lanes, and you can't blitz as much because you don't want, because clearly, as it showed on the big blitz, the corner blitz that Tyrod caught them in for the big play to Clay, like, he's exceptionally dangerous. So that limits what you can do as a defense. And so if the offensive line is not that great, it'll show up more in the run game than anything else. So that was interesting as I kind of was thinking about the game. And then on defense, I mean, I think, again, some of it is the opposition. I mean, again, like, the Giants just looked terrible. They couldn't put one foot in front of the other for most of it. And you know, they could go completely off the rails this year. I wouldn't be surprised. If Manning or Beckham gets hurt, I could see, you know, the team just completely falling apart. They just don't have anyone who really scares me on that team. You know, the defense obviously may be a little bit better. Of course, that's what I was saying last year before they beat us. So it'll be more...
Well, beating the Bills is not exactly the mark of...
No, exactly, and they went on to do nothing, if I recall. They certainly did not make the playoffs. So, you know, and so I think I am looking forward to the game this weekend against Washington to just kind of get a little better sense against a team that's got a little more powerful offense. Even with Cousins, I think, being definitely overrated, I still think he's kind of a decent quarterback, and they have enough weapons on that team in terms of other guys that this will be a better challenge. So. Why don't we do 3 stars real quick, and then we'll do any final thoughts about the game, and then we can move on to the rest of the news, which is obviously much more depressing. And it was nice to see that the team played as hard as they did, given everything else that was going on with Marcel and Carlos.
Yeah, although, well, we'll get into Carlos in a minute, but I know James Wilder said, like, he didn't know what was going on after the game. So, wait, what?
Yeah, some guys probably, yeah, I'm sure, probably weren't even tracking on it. So I'm going to give the honorable mention to wide receiver LeSean McCoy, who had 4 catches for 58 yards and a touchdown. A very nice performance from him. LeSean McCoy, the running back, just obviously, as we already said, had a terrible game. So LeSean McCoy, wide receiver, gets honorable mention for his nice performance and a very nice catch in the end zone.
It was like a very Larry Centers type performance. Well, you got five carries for 3 yards, but really a threat out of the backfield.
Unlike Jerome Felton, who is very much looking like the number two fullback at this point. Which
he could even be the number three behind Zimmer at this point. Yeah, I mean, Zimmer. Lord, he was the least impressive.
Zimmer can catch. We should see if he can take that fullback dive that Gronkowski was doing. Yeah. So your number three star is going to be Jarrell Worthy, who I thought played a really well game, and we're going to need him a lot. And that was interesting. I'm glad I was actually listening to some of the announcers, who can usually be pretty terrible during the preseason. Was it Tasker? I couldn't even tell.
It was Tasker,
and Ray Bentley, I think, does that.
Who actually they know each other really well.
Anyway, I was going to say Jarrell Worthy, again, like apparently a second-round pick out of Green Bay from two, three years ago, but never really kind of had the light bulb come on there. So maybe you could see a little of the talent flash here with his five total tackles, two solo, two tackles for loss, and then again kind of keying that Bills run defense, who, again, at this point is basically him, Adolphus Washington, and Corbin Bryant, or is it the other one?
Corbin
Bryant. Yeah, there was another like backup defensive tackle we had who was pretty decent, but we cut one of them. So I think Bryant's the one who's still on the team. So they did a really good job. Again, the offensive line for the Giants and the running game for them, not exactly like a house of fire, but they certainly were committed to it. So good on them for sticking through it the whole game without a lot of breathers, just because, again, the depth is so poor right now on the D-line.
Tyrus Wynn, that was the one they cut. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, they did cut Jairus Wynn.
I had to think about that for a minute.
So your second star, I'm going to call him Walt Kiseg Powadil.
Oh, good name.
With 9 catches for like 110 yards and a touchdown. So if you have the combined powers of all three wide receivers when they assemble into mega number three wide receiver, actually pretty good.
There are 3 Voltrons in the universe, 2 of which made it to the United States. It's decidedly still the 3rd Voltron, but it's a Voltron nonetheless, and it is capable of doing some positive things.
It's not the car nor the lion Voltron, it's the 3 robot Voltrons, which somehow ended up in a toy store, and I had one of the 3.
Wow.
And I was like,
if you still have that, we're going to be busy next time in D.C.
I don't, and you know why? Because I was annoyed, because I think I got it, if I remember right, I was very young. I got it for a present, and someone had rightly got me Voltron, but got me the one goddamn Voltron I had never heard of or seen before. So as a child, I wasn't thinking like, oh, wow, this will be awesome. I was thinking, what the fuck kind of ridiculous Voltron did Grandma get me?
Grandma knew she wanted to make you rich.
Yeah, right. Grandma knew, I guess, better, but whatever. I still wanted the Lion Voltron.
But anyway, so the last 2 minutes brought to you by Voltron the movie coming in 2018. And in the meantime, yes, I liked what we saw from the number 3 wide receiver. So I'm increasingly, like, as people remember maybe 2 weeks ago when we were talking before training camp started, that 3rd wide receiver was one of the ones that we were more worried about. I am actually increasingly less worried about that at this point. Now I'm obviously much more worried about the front 7 and just who's going to be playing there. But I think I'm much less concerned between Goodwin, Little, Lewis had a catch, Powell obviously has done some nice things. There's going to be someone who can give us some... a nice breather there and kind of help Woods and Watkins hopefully stay healthy, especially if one of them gets hurt, which is honestly pretty likely at this point. And then your first star, obviously Tyrod Taylor, 7 of 10, 132, and a touchdown. He did take 1 sack, but also had... Excuse me, I burped. 2 yards rushing. So Tyrod, boy, he could be really good. It's kind of like you don't want to say it. Like, you don't want to say he's good or that he's fantastic or that he could be, like, awesome. Because it just, it's like if you speak about it, it might not happen. Like, it's just the whispering of greatness off in the distance. You just don't want to scare it away.
Yeah.
That's my thoughts.
No, I'd agree. It makes that contract look like, okay, we're going to definitely re-up him after the year, but, you know, take on the larger portions of the contract after this season. And he's a new, new type of quarterback, because this is what other quarterbacks have done successfully on and off over the last 30, 40 years. But that combination of, I think what makes him unique is that combination of escapability, ability to scramble, that we've only seen in Buffalo in terms of Doug Flutie, but he's got that arm, too. He's got that accuracy on the deep balls. You know, he does need to work on the intermediate routes, of course, as we've discussed, but there's a football instinct there, too, that makes him successful, and if that's what has me most encouraged. I don't see him do a lot of dumb stuff, and I feel like Fitzpatrick was, you know, for a Harvard graduate, you may have heard, did a lot of dumb stuff because he overestimates his arm. You know, I just see a lot of football smarts out of Tyron. That's what has me really encouraged.
Yep, 100%. Okay.
I feel like we'll be watching Tyrod Taylor sitting out of camp in 3 years renegotiating his contract, which is a good thing. So.
Which is fine. Pay the man.
Yeah.
But anyway, so we will now move on to the more disappointing kind of and unfortunate news. So obviously everyone remembers Marcel being suspended for the first 4 games of the offseason or the regular season due to a missed drug test. That was immediately followed by some very pretty aggressive statements from the Bills about how they were disappointed and frustrated with how you know, Marcel was being selfish and, you know, doing things to affect the team and kind of coming out pretty strong against Darius, which was maybe not surprising because obviously those things are somewhat true. But then, you know, you then see he's kind of being checked into rehab 2 days later. And now it's to me that I wonder what are the narratives here. I think there is definitely one, and it's possible, and it's obviously us as Bills fans, none of us really know unless anyone of here knows Marcel Darius and has not said so. Okay.
No, well, I do know. I would let that be known immediately.
So in that case, it's kind of like there's one narrative that you can clearly see, which is kind of the selfish, you know, not, you know, big-headed kind of super talented guy, but never really cares that much about his other teammates, and he's had a long history of stupid decisions, and this is another one, and now that's what we saw from, you know, the statement on Thursday, I think it was, about from the team was all, you know, very much, or Wednesday was very much about, you know, kind of trying to show some discipline to him, and now this rehab thing is just kind of like, well, we got to do it because we want to see if something we can do to help him, but he's not really committed to it, and he's being forced to go to a certain extent. Or there's a very different narrative, which is Marcel's a very troubled young man who had a lot of problems growing up in his life and is still trying to deal with a lot of those issues, and he's been trying, but he's clearly not over it. And in that case, the statement that came out on Wednesday was obviously a little short-sighted, given that he has since checked himself into rehab in terms of maybe not helping him get to where he needs to be. So I don't know, but do either one of those narratives make more sense to you guys, or do you think they're equally valid, or is there anything else that you can think of? I mean, I'll start with Frank on this one.
I think it's – well, I appreciate you laying out the kind of spectrum because I think it's always good to keep in mind how big the box is when we think about – where people are and what they're doing. And for me, it's almost always entirely not either end, but somewhere in the middle. And I don't think it's – I think it's difficult. I think if you think about marijuana use the way that some people think about a beer and you just want to go home and have a beer, and even though your job says you're not supposed to have a beer and everyone's like, you know, you're getting paid X million dollars a year to not have a beer, I think it would be understandable to, at least it would be understandable to know that it would be harder for some people to not have their beer at the end of the day than others. And I think it's about as harmful, you know, it's just that we look at the two things differently. Obviously, I think when we were talking last week about this on the pod, we didn't yet know that he actually didn't fail the test, he just never showed up for it, which is an important distinction because it really sort of shows, like, culpability or a sense of not taking it seriously. But I don't know. I don't want to really ascribe a lot of motives into the – I made it up word, motivery – to him. And I'm just sort of I suppose I am glad that if he actually thinks it's – I'm glad that he's pursuing this treatment course and that the Bills are supporting him if he actually wants to, you know, view this treatment course – actually, like if he is really sort of doing this and he's not more or less being pressured by the team into doing it. I guess that's still good for him either way, but I'm more excited about this and more happy for him and less upset about the whole deal if he's actually interested in doing this and not just sort of being forced into it.
There is a very telling quote, I think, from Kyle Williams, and obviously Kyle would presumably know better than all of us. You know, he says, "I care more about him than I do his football career," and this is from BuffaloBills.com. "So I want to see him be better, and if this is the step," and it just says, this is obviously not correct grammar, so I don't know if the transcription was wrong or what, but it says, "If this is the step the him and Terry and Kim thought he needed to take, and this is going to work out in the long run better for him, then so be it." So that seems, that seems very much like Terry and Kim are, who are, of course, for everyone knows, is the owners of the Bills, very much involved here in their investment, seem to suggest a bit of...
And I think... Yeah, like, I think that's fair, too, that if you're paying someone that much money, you know, you can say, like, you're allowed to pressure them a little and say, we want you to do this.
Anyway, Paul, your thoughts?
Yeah, when you present the information the way Frank recapped it, too, I'm reminded of a joke by the late, great comedian Mitch Hedberg, which you guys may remember. Mm-hmm. He said, alcoholism is a disease, but it's the only one you can get yelled at for hassle. God damn it, Otto, you're an alcoholic. God damn it, Otto, you have lupus. One of those two doesn't sound right. And that's kind of what it is with drug use, too. You know, and I think both of the narratives you present, I think they can both coexist. You have this sense of, hey, you really need to get your act together. This is something that's... as a person, as Frank mentioned, like your job tells you not to drink beer and it pays you millions of dollars, you know, you should have enough discipline to not drink beer. But as Frank noted, there are some people that is just naturally, for whatever reason, biology, environment, history, like Marcel's history, it's going to be harder for them than others. And Marcel falls into that category of someone who it's going to be harder for. So I think I like the get your act together message, but I also like the, hey, we recognize, though, this is a problem, and we appreciate that you recognize this is more than just a, all right, I'll stop doing it thing. It's not like, you know, poking your brother in the rib, stop doing that. You can eventually control whether or not you stop doing that. If you're having issues going back to the well with drugs, you might have an issue. You very well could. So I like the harshness of the statement to get your act together, because it makes you realize it's his inability to address this issue is hurting many other people, which makes the fans. And I also like the statement of support when he says, yeah, you're right, I need help, and I'm going to go get some, I'm going to go to rehab. So I'm totally fine with both those narratives. I'm totally fine with those things coexisting. And hopefully it's a step in the right direction for Marcel, because the team is depending on him. And, you know, his family that's left, and I don't mean that to be insensitive, but there's just been so much death and so much tragedy in his family that's left is dependent on him, not just for the financial aspect, which he's already able to provide, but for the role model, for helping generations of Darius's down the road be responsible adults. So with that on him, I'm glad to see both. I'm glad for the sternness, and I'm glad for the support from the Bills organization.
You don't feel that's going to... I mean, this is the question about how those narratives collide, though, is that if you're really Marcel Darius and you really feel like you're going through a really tough time, and then you have someone come in and, you know, say you're disappointing all your teammates, you're disappointing your coaches, you're doing all that stuff, and then if that's the case, then doesn't that drive you against the organization? I mean, I guess it seems like that would do it to me. Like, if I'm going through a really rough time and then people who are my bosses and my coworkers start criticizing me because I'm going through a rough time, I would not really want to come back and work there. You know, again, like, yeah, I mean, now obviously if they're, you know, putting him into rehab, then they're hopefully that bridges some of that gap. But I'm just, if that's, and again, obviously we don't know what's really going on, but no. This is
a great discussion, because yeah, it can involve so many different things. In one sense, I'd see it as some people need that tough love, and maybe when the suspension came down and people knew about it, maybe Marcel was not as open, like, listen, I know I have a problem. And he's like, whoops, I screwed up. And maybe that's what inspired the harshness. So you're right, we don't really know what's going on to spur that reaction. I've seen it both ways. You guys might remember on a podcast about 3 months ago, I noted that during the course of the podcast, one of my employees had quit, you know, during the podcast itself, which was happening at like 8 at night. And
she really disagreed with that EJ Manuel take that
she did. Yeah,
your take was way too hot.
Here's what's one of the things that spurred her quitting was me saying to her, like, your absences lately are really hurting the team. And she took that as me being insensitive based on circumstances in her life. But I've delivered similar message to people who have been like, thank you, I needed a kick in the ass. And that's what some people have said to me as well. And those are also successful employees. So you're right. You never know what reaction you're going to get. And I do think it depends on context. Now, if Marcel had gone and said to the organization, like, I really need help, I'm going to check myself into rehab, I'm in the process now, then I would not be as in favor of the harshness of the message on Wednesday. But without that knowledge, you know, it's tough to know. I'm basing it on what we do know and thinking I'm okay with it.
Why the two orders, Colonel? Why the two orders?
That's my only question. I think what that means is we all now know that Paul's kind of a dick as a boss.
Enough said.
You directly supervise 34 people, you try not to be a dick sometimes. You know, there's times you're just going to be like, I got to be a dick now. I don't want to do it.
No. It's dick time, guys.
It's got to be done.
That's what they see when they say when the Paul comes walking down the hall. It's dick time. All right, let's move on to another.
Same thing they used to say when I was a gigolo.
Maybe next dick.
Let's move on to another potential dick, Carlos Williams.
All right.
Who was released by the Bills on Saturday. Bills GM Doug Whaley says that this is a performance-based bonus, and the release of Carlos Williams was strictly performance-based. He came in behind the eight ball and never caught up, and there were other guys on the roster that moved ahead of him. So in light of that, we thought, why hold on to him? Why don't we give him a chance to maybe find another job out there in the league? We weren't going to hold on to him to the end, knowing he wasn't going to make the team. So a fairly, again, a tough line coming out of the Bills front office slash coaching staff on Carlos, though we all know, as proven last season with another Bills running back fan favorite, Fred Jackson, that the 53-man roster is only the provision of one man, which is Doug Whaley. So I ask you, gentlemen, do you feel like Carlos Williams was... I mean, again, you haven't seen him play. You've heard the stories, but do you feel like this was a wise move from the Bills? And we will start with Paul.
All right, this is a tough one right here because I always like to compare this to other circumstances we can remember, and I can't quite remember one like this. You know, we have some where the Bills have a player and they think, oh, he's young. We think highly of him, and then he ends up getting tossed aside like Derrick Rogers type. And then we have others who perform well as rookies and then fade away and then get cut, you know, either fade away or get injured or something like that happens and they get cut and be like, oh boy, a shame of waste potential. I understand this move. I remember Brandon Spoon in the early 2000s fits that description. I'm sure there are more recent Bills that come to other people's mind. But I can't remember one where a guy has just knocked him down, great rookie season, a major reason that the Bills were rated one of the top five in terms of their running back stable by most publications was that this guy in limited action, I shouldn't say limited, but he battled some injuries, had the concussions that caused him to miss games, just impressed us so much with his running style and his results. You know, he had great results as a rookie, including the touchdown string that he had. So all of that, it just really surprises me, but it makes me think like the Bills are not going to make this move unless they feel it's good from a business perspective as well. I shouldn't jump to that conclusion. God knows they've done that before. But this is probably like, man, he's a young guy. He's made some mistakes before and he had such a great season. Let's give him another chance. But they could also look at it as, wow, he came back. He'd actually gained weight from the OTAs when we had, you know, said he was not going, you know, he wasn't going to play because he was already too fat. And then he had 4 days of practice where he didn't do anything. And we have Reggie Bush, who's looked really good so far. LeSean has looked rejuvenated. They're impressed enough, obviously, with some combination of Jonathan Williams or James Wilder or Boom Heron or Mike Gills, like all these guys. And they probably thought, you know what? We're sorry, Carlos. You are a drain on the team right now. So, you know, maybe he gets together. Maybe they re-sign him at some point down the road. But if not, I think this is their way of saying, you know, we want to move forward as a team, and we don't feel we can do that with Carlos Williams. So I was shocked. You know, I really did not expect it at all, which is the definition of shocked, of course. So, you know, we're not on the practice field, though. And I'm guessing that there was probably some some understanding of what it takes, although James Wilder did say it hurt him, you know, that he couldn't reach out to him. He knows what he's going through. And fortunate to have someone like that, a brother get dismissed from, like his brother get dismissed from the team. They put in hours studying the playbook, watching film. They've known each other since 2010. But Rex was very straightforward in his statement. So I'll get behind this move.
Okay. Frank?
I don't know. I don't want to say I'm not behind it. I just don't understand it. Because even if you don't think he's going to make the team, there's still no reason to let him go. Because he's not going to count as a roster spot until October. And if Mike Gillisley is... So really what the Bills have to have said, or at least hopefully they asked this question in the room when they said, are we letting Carlos Williams go, is, okay, let's imagine that we have LeSean McCoy, Mike Gillisley, and Williams, whichever one of the Williams, Jay Williams, right? I forget.
Jonathan Williams.
Reggie Bush. And Reggie Bush. And let's imagine one or two of them are hurt before October. Do we feel more comfortable going to find another running back or having fat Carlos Williams on the team? And if they asked that question and then came to the conclusion, we still don't want fat Carlos on the team, then I understand that. I guess I accept that their I don't know if I agree with their reasoning, but I at least know that they thought that through. He must have done something. There must have been something that happened between Friday afternoon and Saturday afternoon that pushed him over the edge.
He was activated on Monday, and just to be clear, the statement from Buffalo Bills on Monday was that he let his levels of fitness slip to keep him off the practice field. The second year running back has reestablished enough of his stamina and endurance to rejoin his Bills teammates at training camp, and he passed his physical and aiming to be activated by the club. So, saying he was working diligently on the side with the strength and conditioning staff over the last 2 weeks. So
something happened between Monday and to yesterday, right, that made them think that he wasn't. Because you listen to
Doug's statement to the media, what he was saying to me was, I always say the information makes the decision. The information was he wasn't ready to play, and guys underneath him surpassed him.
That's I guess, but even if he's the last guy on the list, to me that says, well, he can be cut in October, because why wouldn't we want to have him in case of an emergency? Rex's tone in the press conference was, I'm not going to talk about this. Maybe he's upset that he did not seem pleased at all with Carlos Williams. He seemed frustrated, not necessarily with the decision. He seemed like he was not okay. And somebody else talked about it. It was Tyrod Taylor. They asked him, and they asked somebody else about it, and they made it sound like, he's had a real struggle sort of getting caught up. I think he must have – there must have been a triggering event that might have come out of he was not fit enough to play Friday afternoon.
That's definitely the root of it, I'm sure.
Right. Yeah. Sure, I'm not saying all that stuff isn't there. I just want to know what was the triggering event where they said, okay, we're just going to cut this guy loose, even though – he was a touchdown a game guy last year, and there's no real penalty to keep him through October. I mean, it could be as simple as, you know, we're doing, you know. By the way, how wonderful it is it to contrast the support and love we give Marcel, who makes $42 million, you know, who's on the we're on the hook for $42 million, isn't a perennial All Star, and a guy who literally is making hundreds of thousands of dollars and can be let go with impunity. He wasn't exactly quite the family. We didn't give Carlos the same family treatment we gave Marcel.
There are shots of Marcel last night in, I think it was in Rochester, at a bar called Encore, getting his party on before it was
interesting.
Yeah.
That might be something there.
That might be something that would lead people to believe that you're maybe not taking things seriously. Yeah, no, I mean, that's the thing for me is I'm kind of agreeing with Frank. Like, I think if they really thought that there was no way that Williams was going to be better than those other four or five guys, like, you tell me right now that James Wilder Jr. and Boom Heron have, and this is the thing, performance is never, like, if performance was the only reason that you would keep someone off the team, like, you'd cut half your draft picks the first season you drafted them, because they're not going to be as good as the guys ahead of them. But you keep younger players because they have the potential to get better, especially someone who's already shown that to a certain extent they can play in this league, whereas Boom Heron and James Wilder Jr. have not proven that. So on some level, the performance thing, I don't think that's entirely how you should be evaluating people. You need to do it on a balance of performance versus future potential. Now, you can add other things into that, including off-the-field stuff. You can add in, you know, commitment or you know, mindset, whatever you want to do to it. But it seems very short-sighted to do this. And I'm really, again, this seems like a little bit of Whaley going rogue here. Because didn't, that was the thing, you guys tell me, didn't Rex say at some point, like last week, that Carlos was going to play against the Giants?
I think that was his plan, yeah.
I don't remember that specifically, so I don't want to.
Okay. Okay.
I'll try and look it up really quickly.
Yeah, I tried to Google it real quick and I couldn't find anything. But it, you know, so it's certainly frustrating, and I think, you know, I liked watching him play, and I think Gillislee is a good back. I think you know, Reggie Bush obviously has some things that he can do for you, but obviously he is much older, much more likely to get dinged, just because most older running backs are. And Jonathan Williams, like, again, he's shown a fair bit during the offseason, but this is preseason. He's a rookie. He's going to have to kind of get through the rookie wall. He's going to have to do all this other stuff. And I'm not saying Carlos obviously had taken some steps back over the last, you know, couple months, but it seems pretty quick to pull the trigger on this, and a very odd timing, too. So I think maybe there is a little more to the story.
And you know, it could be as simple as, and reasonable, and I would go for this, if they were like, we have a Friday meeting or something, or a Saturday meeting, you have to be at the stadium by time X on Saturday. Everybody who's playing has to be there by time X. And he didn't make it. And if he's already on thin ice, okay, based on everything else, and he didn't make it to the stadium on time, or he missed a meeting last night, or they know he went out partying or something after they told him, you're on thin ice and you shouldn't be doing this, then it might be a situation where you have to not only cut him, you have to sort of honor the line you're drawing it in the sand with somebody. And so if it could be like, you don't want everyone to think that you can be walked all over, and this is a guy that we can make an example of, even if we can't make an example of Marcell Dareus, whether we want to or not, then I understand it a bit more. It's like, okay, you're going to have to, you know, we're going to bench you. We told the, you know, we told Bryce Harper he has to run out to first. And if he doesn't run out the fly balls to first, he's going to be set. Kind of stupid to do, but you know what? If you've drawn that line, you kind of have to honor it. And so it could be that Whaley or Rex drew a line like that with him that they just felt like
had to be done. I mean, I get that. It's just, it seems, again, like, you know, it does seem like there's more to the story in that performance. It's Whaley, and that's the thing. And now, that's, again, like, we all know this. We're all adults. Like, Whaley, like, he can't come out and say, yeah, Carlos missed a meeting last night, and that was the line we drew in the sand, and we're gonna cut him now. Like, that, I mean, in some ways, I think some people would buy that. In other ways, I think people would be pissed off about it. I feel like the performance-based argument is a much safer argument. If you just say he's not good anymore, that's why we're getting rid of him. Like, you can't dispute that. Obviously, if he's not good anymore, you can't. But that's, I think there's much more to the story here. And so now that kind of, again, Whaley's a jerk. The end.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys have heard that from me before, but
definitely, this is a Whaley problem.
Yeah. Okay. So. So we'll move on now, and we finally have reached it. Here it is.
Man.
After long ado, Matt Damon, come on out.
Yeah.
We're gonna play Frank's Run schedule game, and you know what? Why don't we just turn it over to Frank to take it over? Is that all right,
yeah,
Frank?
Sure. As I pull it up in my email.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, he does. We noted we tried to drag this on, but we could only get 38 minutes out of the first run of the podcast. So now we've really got.
I'm actually kind of glad it got
some
pushed back.
To leave here?
Well,
yeah.
Some of mine changed because I did it initially, and then I changed it after the Marcell and Carlos suspensions.
Right.
Oh,
and
I haven't heard that.
You know, so but also at the end of last week, it was a lot of bad news, but now they just beat the Giants, and so maybe like that, you know, they didn't just beat the Giants, they smothered the Giants preseason, so maybe that helps. So what I did was, we're always sort of saying that we want to try different things with the way we look at the schedule and different sort of segments, and so I asked the guys, let's take a look at the season and try, rather than pick them as, you know, pick the schedule and what the record will be, can we dump all the games into four different categories? Games the Bills should win, games that are winnable, games that they could maybe win, and or won't win. Those would be the four boxes. And you could think of could win and could maybe win as basically, you know, you wouldn't favor them, you don't think they would win, but it's within the realm. of possibility. If you squint, you can see them winning. Winnable is sort of the opposite of that, where, like, yeah, they should beat this team, but as we know, it's the Bills, and, you know, this could be one of the ones they drop. With, and then at the two extremes, should win and won't win, these are your, you know, there's, it would be beyond, it would be remarkable if they somehow lost this game. It would be incredibly remarkable if they somehow won this game. And I thought if we do that, we'd sort of get a sense of where we think the Bills aren't just, you know, 9-7, 10-6, that's sort of in one way concrete and in another way abstract, because it doesn't really paint the picture of how we view these teams in comparison to the rest of the league. And so I thought if we did it this way, we could sort of get a sense of what we make of the Bills. I would invite listeners to get the schedule right now, pause the podcast, and write down each of the games, the home and away games for the divisions as well. So you should have 16 total teams. 16 total games sorted into these four boxes. When you've got it all set, unpause the podcast if you remember that you were listening to a podcast, and compare notes. But I would, yeah, go for it, because we've done that already. We've taken some time and thought about it, and I'm actually going to maybe have to think about this on the fly, because as I'm looking at some of these, I don't know if I am going to change or what. But let's...
Yes, I'm looking forward to one of your... should wins. I'm like, really? We'll see. I'm off two categories on it, so I look forward.
Oh, really? Okay. Okay, so how do we want to do this? Do we want to start with should win and what we think the should win games are?
Yeah, I think that's the most time-efficient way of doing it.
Yeah, come up with the locks both ways, and then we can, and if there's any big issues, we can debate, and then we can get down to the other last 10 games or whatever.
Okay, and I am going to try and keep a master list of the teams we agree upon. So it probably won't be all 16 teams on our list, but we will at least have the ones that we know. I invented this game, so I will start. And I will say the games that I think are should wins, I would be surprised if they lost these games, are the Jets at home, the Dolphins at home, the Jaguars at home, the Browns at home, and on the road in Los Angeles. Because I think Los Angeles is a really bad team. So those are my five
quasi-locks.
Quasi-lock. Those are the five games I feel the best about for the Bills.
All right. I have the Jets as a should win.
Okay.
I have home versus the Niners as a should win.
Ah, okay.
I have home versus Jacks as a should win, home versus Cleveland as a should win, and I have home versus Miami in December as a should win. Actually.
Okay.
Scott and I are almost simpatico.
And then I don't know what you're smoking with the Rams thing. We're going to have to talk about that. But okay.
Yeah.
Paul, why don't you go?
Yeah, I'll do my should win, then we're going to be talking about the Rams. Because I think
let me just finish writing down Scott's.
Yep, go right ahead. I will...
It was Jacksonville, Cleveland, Miami, San Francisco, and the Jets. All five home games, I think. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So here are my four should wins. I also had San Francisco. I also had Jacksonville. I also had Cleveland. And I also had Miami. And I believe all of those are, in fact, home games.
So Miami, Jacksonville, Cleveland, San Francisco. Yep. And you are leaving
the Jets
the
off.
Jets and the Rams. Yeah, okay, the Jets off.
Here's where I the Jets, I'm only off one category with you. I'm winnable for the Jets. I'm not bad. At Los Angeles Rams, I have this personally. I don't know where you have them, Scott. I have it in the could/maybe win category, meaning less than 50% chance of winning this game.
I had that there, and I'm just looking at this today, and I just finished watching the game, so maybe I'm being influenced a little bit. You know, I have the recency bias of watching them destroy the Giants. But I had it as a maybe until today, and then today I've kind of moved it more into the better than 50% chance kind of winnable game, like at the Rams. But definitely, I mean, I can never take this team going west for...
That's my big thing. When was the last time they... Isn't it something like 15 years or so, or maybe 12 years since they've won in the Pacific time zone? Something like that?
Yeah, especially if after the big game at New England the week before, like that seems like the, I don't want to call it a trap game because it's obviously home versus the Niners. You think you're probably going to win that one, so maybe that's a little bit part of the trap. But still, like that one has danger written all over it. There's no doubt we're a better team, and if we'd be playing at home, I'm fine having this by 2 scores.
The Rams were 7-9 team last year, which is a worse team, but not all that much. So you know.
Starting a rookie QB, I get it. But.
Yeah, I mean they're a bad team. They're moving into Los Angeles. They're sort of all out of sorts as an organization. I felt like I don't know if I like it. And I understand the trepidation with regards to going west, but I feel like they got to win one of these games going west eventually, and this looks like the one to me. So with the Niners, I have them in the next column. I have them in the winnable column. So I feel like I'm not too far off with that.
Okay.
I'm a little surprised that Paul doesn't put the Jets with us in the should-win category at home.
Yeah, I did initially, honestly, and I changed it up with the Marcel suspension. They were
okay.
Sorry, I think that's a very, very big loss for this defense. And I was concerned enough to say, coming off a short rest, you now have to do this without a player who's been dominant against the Jets in recent years. That's
true.
That's the only reason it bumped down to win. Otherwise, mine would be match for match with Scott on the should win category. But okay. I bumped down for that. The Marcel reason.
That's reasonable. Yeah, no, he's a big loss. There's no doubt about that.
So as it stands, we all have three. We all believe the Bills are going to win at least three games this year. We all think they're going to win the Dolphins, Jaguars, and Browns game at home with, strong feelings that they could beat the Jets and not strong feelings, two out of three thinking we can beat the Jets and Niners at home. And then the Rams, I'm apparently on an island. So, okay. Let's go with winnable, and let's start with Scott's winnables.
Okay. So
these are the ones that it's still more than 50% chance, but it's not – a lock.
Okay, so I kind of, and this is another one I kind of moved, again, maybe recency bias, but I kind of moved the Baltimore game into winnable now. I had that as a maybe. You know, they had a lot of guys coming back this year from injury, but, I still think we're, and it's a road game, so that's maybe tough to start out on the road with a win, but I think we could do that. So I'm comfortable putting that as winnable. That you mean like the ones that we should win at home, kind of? Like, not like locks, but like...
Yeah, I think winnable is the Bills are expected to win this game, but we could see them losing.
Right, it's the difference between being like a 10-point favorite and a 3-point favorite, or a 5-point favorite.
Okay.
Where I'm they should win, but,
I'm going to downgrade one, too, because for some reason I had Arizona as a winnable game, and that's definitely not...
Well, that's crack smoking right there, yes.
Yeah, that's crazy talk. So then we'll skip down to... again, I had the Rams as winnable at this
point.
I have Miami at Miami as winnable, and I have at Oakland as winnable.
Okay.
That is it.
So I have you for Ravens, Dolphins, Rams, and what was the last one? Oakland. Oakland.
Yep.
All right, Scott. Okay.
All right. One of these is going to spur some disagreement.
Okay.
I think what's going to spur more disagreement on mine is how short my winnable list is, which is three games.
Okay.
One we've already discussed, the New York Jets at home Thursday night, home opener, I have as winnable. I have, like you gentlemen, at Miami as a winnable game, based on the Bills' success against that team in recent years, and I don't think much has changed in that regard. The one I have, which will generate some what are you smoking, is Pittsburgh. I think Pittsburgh is I think they're going to get worse from last year. It's a home game. I think the Bills, it's the counter logic I used in the Rams game, which is they haven't won on the West Coast in so long. They haven't beaten Pittsburgh since the 90s, I think we established last time. But I think despite their run at the end of last season, I just don't think Pittsburgh is going to be all that great. I think this is the year they finally. I think Stevie Johnson catches the ball this time.
Interesting. Okay. Mm.
Mm.
I'm not that far off. I see your points. I think it's just tough. If I'm kind of giving us a break on like the Ravens game or the Rams game or something, it seems like pushing it to give us the Pittsburgh one too. But I kind of see where you're going. Frank, you didn't do yours, did you?
No, I'm about to do mine now. I'm with Scott on the Ravens. I think we can beat the Ravens. I think this is where the, as I said, this is where the 49ers go for me. I think it's winnable, not necessarily a lock. At Jets, also with Scott. But I think that's because, and so it's interesting, it's good because we can see that Paul values the Jets more than we do. The one thing we all agree on is the Dolphins. We all think the Dolphins are not as good as Buffalo, because we all have them in the win and winnable column in the same spots. And then lastly, my controversial pick, at the Patriots, week four with Jimmy Garoppolo, I think that's the one they can win. And so I think they're going to be – now, look, I actually have not revised this since Marcell Dareus got suspended. I'm going to leave it there, though. I'm going to leave it there because I'm just going to be controversial. I think without – and that's actually maybe why I don't like the Steelers game in this column, because I'm really sort of just accepting that quarterbacks win football games now. And, you know, as long as Ben Roethlisberger is going to be Ben Roethlisberger, I don't know that I can – I don't know that I can put them – in a winnable column yet, but who knows? Maybe by then Tyrod Taylor will be a little bit more established, and I'll feel more comfortable with him, and like we can go toe to toe with some of these guys.
Yeah, no, I have New England in the maybe category, and it's definitely obviously if it's Brady who's playing, then it's definitely a no. That's
right,
just a not even in the question. But so that gives me Garoppolo gives me one step up to where I can see maybe. Him just having a bad game, and then it's hard for the Pats to kind of get back into it. You know, we played the Pats relatively well last year, if I recall. I mean, obviously the first half kind of got out of hand at home last year, and we kind of fought our ways back into it. Hopefully we won't have to do that on the road, because that would be difficult. But we ended up playing better on the road, if I recall, right?
Right.
Yeah, so.
Okay, so... next, we're going to do the could maybe win, which I'm going to give to Paul. And to remind you, Paul, these are ones that the Bills probably won't be favored in. They'll be underdogs. They'd be slight to moderate underdogs. And you have to kind of squint to see them winning, or maybe you have to imagine, like, the Bills have to play an extra good game to get the win. It's not necessarily like they would need a lot of help from up above. But they would need a couple things to kind of go right to win these games.
Right. So I would this is going to be a tough one for me. I think because you guys are going to rate me over the calls, but that's fine. All right. So Baltimore, I have in the could maybe win category. They're right now they're a 3-point underdog against Baltimore. Obviously we're still 3.5 weeks away from the is it 3 weeks away from the opener? Holy crap. We're 3 weeks away from this game, so that line will change. Mm-hmm. But I think they'll be an underdog. I think this is one of the – honestly, and we'll get to this when we cover the game, but I think anything can happen that opener. We've seen that so many times. The Bills beat the Patriots 31-0 a season where the Bills went 6-10 and the Patriots went 14-2 and won a title. I think the openers are ripe for crazy things to happen. So I think it's a win. By that logic, they could win. I think the Ravens will have Flacco back. They're going to be better. They're going to be at home. I had this initially in full disclosure, I had this in my winnable category before the Marcell suspension, so for what it's worth. Could maybe win. I've got the Rams in this as well, the Los Angeles Rams. We've discussed that in detail.
Mm-hmm.
Could maybe win. I have at New England and home against New England. It's funny. I really wanted to bump up the at New England one for the same reason that Frank did. But then again, with Marcell going out and with Belichick, being able to run all over them with Blount in the finale a couple of years back. I just think Belichick is going to kind of have this game planned on what he's going to do with that first. I think about the first game last year, too. He found vulnerabilities in the Bills' defense, and he exploited them. I think he'll have, three weeks worth of footage to go from in the Bills' regular season without Marcell. He's going to exploit it again. Home against New England, Brady will be back. I'm not even going to bother going to that. And the one I have downgrade a bit from you guys is at the Jets. I still think the Bills are a better team than the Jets. I think it's ridiculous that there are a lot of people saying that, the Jets were 10 – well, not saying the Jets were 10-6 and the Bills were 8-8. That's not ridiculous. That's fact. But I just think talent-wise, I think the Bills have a distinct advantage in this. So, but I think on the road, it's just – I think they've had such a good run against the Jets, 5 in a row, might be 6 in a row if our predictions are accurate right now. So, you know, I think that's got to come to an end eventually. I think it'll be this. It could be this year. I could see them losing that game.
Okay. All right.
Scott.
I had, so as I mentioned, I downgraded Arizona to a maybe win, in the sense that I could kind of see them winning. I honestly think this is going to be a tough one for the Cardinals, because they're the ones who do have to come east. And obviously they got some good talent on that team. But at the same time, I think everything kind of came together for them well last year, and I could see very easily this year kind of being a step back for them. And if so, this would be one of the games that they would kind of lose, and they'd kind of be like, well, we didn't see that one coming. So, but you know, still, there's a lot of talent on that team.
Which team again?
Arizona.
Arizona, okay.
Yeah. So then I've also got the New England game, as I mentioned before, and I also have the Pitts.
Just to be clear, that's the...
At New England.
At New England, okay. Yeah.
And then I also have the Pittsburgh game as one where I can kind of see us getting by under the Tyrod is as good or close to good as Roethlisberger by that point theory, which, you know, is not too far out there. At the Jets last game of the season, I also have one that we might be able to get out. I think that one, yeah, I mean, they could be obviously in the very opposite position that we were last year, hopefully for the Bills, in the sense that hopefully we're playing for the playoffs, and they're playing for a spoiler, and they feel like they can kind of jump up and bite us there, and obviously those things have obviously happened in the past to the Bills. So I wouldn't be at all surprised if we've lost that game, though I do think we are still the better team, even if we are on the road there. So.
Okay. This is going to be the first category where all three of us don't agree on a team, so that's kind of cool, because I only have two teams in here. I have going to Oakland, I feel like is a game that is going to be kind of what you guys think the LA game is, where you have to go west and you have to play. But to me, Oakland's a better team. Oakland is like and I feel like Oakland is the team that they probably will be flat against. And the other one for me is the Bengals, which I'm assuming actually you guys probably have in the not going to win category, since we haven't seen it yet.
If we were paying attention, we could all know each other's next category.
Correct. Yeah. Which they're obviously a very good team. I have them in the squint category because I tend to just not really believe fully in the Bengals, and so I feel like the Bengals are the better Bills, and so for me, they're not Tom Brady and the Patriots and some of the other teams that I'll mention in a second. They're a step below that, and so I could see the Bills sort of beating them. I will go ahead, and these are the won't win. These are the ones that if we agree on will be the game. These are games that we think can certainly be chalked up at loss for losses. For me, that's Patriots at home, that's Steelers at home, that is the Cardinals game. The only sort of weird caveat there was that they're coming east, but the Cardinals are very good. And going to Seattle, which I think will be, pardon my French, a goddamn nightmare. So I just have zero good feelings about any four of those games. I think if I had to say which one I felt the best about, I would say it would be the Steelers or Cardinals at home. The Steelers, I think, are probably the weaker team. The Cardinals are coming from west to east. But the Seahawks and Patriots are absolute. Just chalk them up as you know. If they score points, I'll be impressed. Like they're going to get blown out of the water. Sell your tickets now to the Patriots at home game to some Patriots fan and pay for the rest of the season with them.
See, that's the interesting thing, though. I mean, I could see us being – that's the thing. Like, I could see us, like, going down to the wire against the Pats at home and then losing because we always do and because Brady's Brady. But I could still see us being in the picture against them. Like, I wouldn't sell those tickets quite yet. That's me. I mean, okay. I definitely had it.
I would keep the tickets and leave after the third quarter.
Yeah.
That's how you do that.
Yeah. Yeah, with the 21-point lead intact. Yeah, exactly. That's the time to go. So, I mean, I still had it in the won't win in the sense that I don't think that we'll get that one off, especially if we do somehow beat them at home or at New England, I should say, then they're definitely going to be extra pissed and coming in to try and beat us on at home. But, I agree with you on the Seahawks. That's just a kind of a massacre. Like, we're just going to have to write off. I have Cincinnati also in that kind of category because I get, they're not as good as Seattle or New England, but they are they are a much better team than us. And I am one of the biggest, bigger Andy Dalton haters out there, but I also can't imagine that they're going to just, that there's not a, that's not an easy win for them. I mean, at home, you know, the middle of the season, kind of, there's nothing really going the Bills' way there, I don't think. Okay. And then I think I had, so those are the three won'ts that I had, the middle of the season kind of.
Seahawks, class. Cincinnati, and New England.
And home versus New England, yeah.
Okay. Paul.
Yeah, I won't spend too much time on the Seahawks and Cincinnati because I have them in the category, and Scott just gave his very good reasons on that as well. Yeah, it's fun, and Frank's not going to disagree on the Seahawks, so no point spending time on those. The two I have is won't wins. I've downgraded. Arizona is the only home game I have in the won't win category, and the reason is I just think they're such a strong team. Looking at them, top to bottom, offensively, defensively, running game, passing game, I just think they're a complete team. I don't think that 13-3 record last year was a fluke at all. You know, you tend to get overshadowed when you're not the team that when you know a team makes a Super Bowl instead of you, especially there's the Panthers were just unstoppable last. I mean, people forget how 15-1. I mean, what are you going to do there? But I think the Cardinals were just an exceptional team, and I think that's going to carry on because they also have age at the right positions and they have youth at the right positions, if that makes sense. The other one, and this is, I could argue against myself on this, I did have at Oakland in the won't win category. If I ever saw us beat Oakland on the, if I weren't so bitter about what happened 2 years ago after the Bills just pushed Denver to the edge in Mile High and then beat Green Bay and then would beat New England in the finale. But right before that New England game, they decided to lose to a terrible Oakland team at Oakland. Oakland won three games. Oakland is now much improved. Derek Carr looks like a much better quarterback. They're headed out to the West Coast to play this one. We've already covered that. So I have this in the won't win category, but can fully acknowledge I'm not going to passionately argue this should be, could maybe win because it shouldn't be in that category because I could see it very well could be.
Okay. Well, what I am doing now, do we have anything else to talk about?
We have the Redskins or the Washington Football Club, depending on how you want to call it, preview. But other than that, yeah.
Yeah, okay. We did have some interesting NFL breaking news that the probable from the injury report will be it's gone the way of the dinosaur. No more probable.
Okay.
So what are you then? You're just...
Okay. So probable's gone. Questionable's meaning has changed to be... let's see. It is... uncertain as to whether the player will play in the game, and doubtful will mean is unlikely that the player will participate. So I there see. You go.
Okay.
Okay.
So questionable. Okay. All right.
Thank so we're,
okay.
We reported here second after Pro Football Talk. But, you know, that is interesting, so no more probables. What will be an interesting development on this is now questionable is going to be such a broad category, could mean anything. So be interested in discussing injury reports this season.
Well, what I am working on right now while we will review the Washington game, football game, is I am categorizing, I'm assigning a score to each game that we just put in these columns. And so at the end here, I will have a confidence rating for each game that we're playing.
Okay.
But I need a minute or two to do the math.
I see. So I'll take back over control of the pod, and
yes.
Paul and I will talk about the Redskins game. This one we will do a slightly more in-depth preview, perhaps, than our other.
It is the week three preseason game, so.
And that's why, so that the starters would theoretically play more. And as I put before, and I'll start very quickly. This team handled us pretty well. It was not even really much of a game last year between the Bills and the Redskins. Obviously, very disappointing for Frank and I living in the greater Washington D.C. area. Finally getting to watch the Bills on TV live, in real time, for me at least. Frank has the Sunday ticket, but and then just seeing them absolutely get hammered. So yeah, it'll be definitely a bit of a yardstick as opposed to playing a team that we didn't play last year or hadn't played in a while. So Paul, do you have any thoughts about what you're looking for or what you want to see?
Yeah, this is the third preseason game, and this is the one I'll watch a little more closely. I think when the Bills are on, defense, the things I'm going to pay most attention to, obviously the performance of the front seven. They're, you know, Darius is not going to be around. He's going to be in rehab, so we're going to have an idea of what it's going to be like the first four games without him. We'll probably see Kyle Williams back in action, is the word on the street. So, you know, we'll get to see him in there. We'll get a reasonable facsimile of what the Bills' front seven will look like at the start of the season. So I'll be interested in seeing what blitzes they're going to throw at them, if they're a little more exotic than the ones we saw in the first two games. I think they will be. I know most teams don't blitz, as we've talked about in the preseason, but Rex has, and I think they'll throw a little bit more out there. So I want to see that. Offensive side of the ball, I would like just a little assurance of some consistency in the running game. I think it's tough to judge anything in the preseason moves we've talked about, but I'd like to see the running game do something of note in those first three quarters. And the other thing I want to see is the team finish these drives. You know, too many times they move the ball and didn't get anything in both of their first two games. So I do want to see that change a little bit. I want to see that finishing ability. I want to see, you know, EJ continue to give me some confidence that the Bills aren't automatically 0-4, however many games he plays this year. So that's kind of what I'll be paying attention to.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, for me, yeah, I think the run game's a good one. obviously, I think I'm going to be interested in how the Bills do, mostly against, the Washington running attack, I guess, is pretty much falling apart because they don't have any healthy running backs. So obviously that's going to put a lot on Cousins, and I think that's one of the things that we always kind of were annoyed with last year, is that we had all these great pass rushers, we had great quarterbacks, and yet teams could still throw the ball against us, still could rack up a lot of numbers, and it was guys like Cousins who weren't even really the top-shelf quarterbacks of the league doing it. So I think that's something I want to make sure that the pass defense, I want to make sure that the blitzes are getting home to a certain extent, but I also just want to make sure that we can cover these guys. And again, Darby and Gilmore are part of it, but it's really everybody else. It's, you know, whether it's Seymour or Nickell Robey-Coleman or the safeties, Williams or Blanton or whoever it is, or Graham, if he's going to play, probably not, then, you know, those guys need to be able to cover the linebackers and the, or the tight ends and the running backs and the third wide receivers, because that's, I think, where we got hurt a lot last year. So I think that's one that I'm going to be looking at. And then on offense, you know, obviously just want to make sure that Tyrod, again, left unsaid is everyone stay healthy. But obviously I do want to make sure that Tyrod keeps working and gets the run game in order, and that, yeah, I mean, it'd be good to see maybe a little bit of the, again, you don't want him having carrying the ball too much on those kind of option read games. I think it'd be seeing a little bit of that in the preseason would be good, just to make sure that we get all the kinks worked out of it before the season gets going. Because I think it ended up, even though again we shouldn't be running it too much this season, hopefully it still means part of an offense and it keeps the defense honest to a certain extent. So, Paul, do you want to do a prediction, even though it's kind of again meaningless, the result?
Well, let's see. I picked the Cardinals yesterday, and that didn't work out too well for me because they of course didn't play in the game. So I've learned from that missed strategy. I am going to say, let's see, I'm trying to think of a creative score. As you know, I've lived in both places. I lived in D.C. for 8 years. I have lived in Buffalo now for the last three. I'm going to say Washington 8-3.
Okay. All right. And I'm going to say, I will attempt to think something at a reasonable kind of score. So I'll say Washington, like...
Mine is reasonable, by the way. You know, a couple field goals and a safety and a field goal. That's all we need.
100%, or four safeties. You never know how it's going to happen.
2-point conversion, all sorts of things.
but yeah, I will say, I'll say like 29-24 Redskins. So a close game. But one that doesn't, one that I think gives us some hope that the team is moving in the right direction. Frank, do you have any thoughts on the game or a prediction, or do you want to just skip to your thing?
Yeah, no, I don't have any really thoughts on the game other than it'll be on TV and I'll actually be at a baseball game because I think it's on Friday night. Yes. And so I look forward to seeing no injuries at the game, and I will say the Bills will win 57-6.
Okay. Big win. I like to see it.
Yep. I am almost done tabulating here. Why don't you give everybody the rundown of where they can get a hold of us, and then I will surprise them with some nice information, please.
And if you want to get a hold of us, again, we are switching our schedule up a little bit due to some life job stuff from yours truly. So join us as we continue our podcast on Sunday now. So during the regular season, we will be recapping the game shortly thereafter when we're full of piss and vinegar. But if you want to, so obviously feel free to leave us your thoughts during the game, during the week. Hopefully I'll have a little more time between me and Frank. We'll have a little more time to chat during the week on the Facebook page if there's stuff you want to talk about there. We'll obviously also catch you up on the news of the week after the game. And obviously for the preseason, it'll be Saturday or Sunday depending on what's going on. But anyway, so yeah, if you want to do that, you can go to our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/bbillsmny. You can also go to iTunes and search for bbillsmny or Buffalo Bills maybe next year and find us there. You can email us at bbillsmny@gmail.com. You can follow Paul, who is usually going to be live tweeting, especially during the regular season. Yep. Paul, did you do it? I don't do the Twitter myself because I'm an old fogey, but did you do it yesterday?
I did not do it yesterday. I did a little bit the game before. I will probably be doing it more so this week, it being game three. But against the Ravens, I will be
being ready to go. And so if you have questions, you can also go to Paul, and he is, of course, tweeting at bbillsmny.
I like twittering just as well. That's a great term.
Twittering also works for you, again, old people like me who aren't hip to the kids today. You can also just Google us and Google bbillsmny. And last week when we Googled ourselves, always Google yourself, kids, but don't do it too much because every time you do it, it makes it a little less special.
You go blind.
Exactly. If you Google Buffalo Bills podcast, you will find that we are none other than, at least on this poor soul's screen, still on the first page, but actually fairly down. I'm behind, on mine, we're behind John Murphy's show twice, the Buffalo News podcast, Bills and Beers, and then John Murphy's show again, and then Building the Herd.
Yes, again. That's the one I didn't want to mention.
Yeah, our new competitor, and we always got along well with Bills and Beers, not really, we certainly cannot allow another independent fan-run podcast. So, yes, listen to us and don't listen to them. There, I said it. And Bills beat we're behind. So yeah, we're
for us it's about winning, please.
Yes, absolutely. Come on, folks. Anyway,
I might have to listen to Building the Herd to see what we're up against. Okay. I'll have to find some way to like stream it without it counting as a download or some terrible.
Yeah, I'm going to their website.
It's probably Grant. Grant has like been gone for months and he's just like doing his own podcast.
Yeah.
Thank you for the wonderful rundown. And now, as a parting gift to our listeners, before we say goodbye, what I did was I took all of our selections for the weighted box game that we just played, and I gave assigned points where I gave everybody who picked them in a, 3 points for the most winnable, all the way down to 0 points for the least winnable, assigned by each of us, so a maximum score of 9 points, 3 points from each of us, all the way down to zero. And so just so you understand where our confidence index indicates, Miami, Cleveland, and Jacksonville were all 9 out of 9. We all think they'll win. 8 out of 9 was the Jets and the Niners at home. So that's 5 games all at home. We think we're going to win all 5 of those games. Coming in next at the next tier was Los Angeles and at Miami, which is a little skewed by my Los Angeles, my heavy Los Angeles pick there. But they each had 6 points. At Baltimore is 5 points, and that is the line between above and below 500 for the score. We have at New England, at the Jets at 4 out of 9 points, at Oakland and Pittsburgh at 3 points. New England at home, at Cincinnati and Arizona at home, each at 1 point, and Seattle at 0 points. So if you divide the between 4 and 5 points, we have the Bills going 8-8. But you look at it and you say, the 4 point games, the New England and, 4 out of 9, that's on that border of, there's enough support that we think we could maybe win 1 or 2 of those games. So per usual, we're looking 8-8 square in the face with a chance at 10-6 and probably a chance at 7-9 as well. So
it's the labors of Hercules, folks. I've ended up with 8-8.
Same as it ever was.
But yes, so thank you for joining us. And if again, please reach out to us and find us and tell your friends. We're always happy to have new listeners that I can make fun of. So until next time, my name is Scott.
I'm Paul.
I'm Frank.
Good afternoon or good evening, everyone.
Bye-bye. Goodbye.